Welcome to Classics Now, the radio program of the North Coast Great Books Discussion Group. I am Solomon Iverta, joined as I usually am by the mellifluous Mary Harper for yet another selection from the shelf of classics. What is going on this month, Mary?
Oh, we have a couple of French poets from the 1880s. It was a wild time in France. They had gone through 100 years of upheaval, mm-hmm. from revolution to Napoleon to kingship back to Napoleon. Nothing was sticking. And finally around 1875, 1880, it got calm. I mean, there was actually something that resembled a good, calm atmosphere, and people just went wild. I mean, Roger Shattuck wrote this wonderful book called The Banquet Years, and it's about these years in after 1880 up until the First World War, and Banquet describes it. I mean, people were eating, drinking, there were salons, there was poetry, and poetry and art were changing at a very rapid pace.
And it sort of overlapped with another description of the Belle Époque, right?
Yes, exactly. And it was kind of the first time there was enough leeway in people's lives to do this sort of thing. And suddenly, you know, people had money to do it as well. Absinthe played a big role in these two poets' lives.
A beverage, we should note, yes.
Yes, a beverage with very intoxicating. Rimbaud was born in 1854. He's the younger of the two poets we're looking at. He was really a precocious kid. He won the Latin Poetry Prize at the age of 14 and was published at 16 and then quit writing at 22.
Right.
So, you know, he had this very short time, and he produced an incredible amount of very luscious poetry.
Yeah.
He had an interesting idea about what poetry was. Now, remember, he's only 15 or 16 when he's writing this. This is in a letter he wrote. He says, "The point is to arrive at the unknown by the disordering of all the senses. The sufferings are enormous, but one has to be strong to be born a poet, and I have discovered that I am a poet." That's the 16-year-old talking.
Yeah.
But he and Verlaine really did attempt to disorder all their senses in a way. Verlaine was born, he had a much more easy upbringing. He was born 10 years earlier and in a middle-class family, and went into civil service and quickly ditched that for poetry. And his father, of course, said, "Okay, I'm not paying for it." So he was poor. Rimbaud's mother, his father deserted them when he was only six, and his mother was extremely severe, both religiously and just in general, just, you know, the original helicopter parent, I think. And
so Rimbaud would run away.
He ran away.
To Paris,
he revolted as much as possible, but just being the most debauched kid he could possibly be.
Oh, yeah.
And so he kept running away, and he'd get sent back. And finally, he writes to Verlaine. Verlaine has published by this time and is known as a poet. So he writes to Verlaine and says, here's my poetry, what do you think? And Verlaine says, "Come to Paris, you're my soulmate." Yeah, so, you know, he's only 16, 17 years old, and Verlaine leaves his wife and child, literally abandons them for Rimbaud. And
wow.
It's a very tempestuous relationship. Obviously, they drink and carouse an awful lot.
Yeah.
They go to London, and Rimbaud starts to get tired of this. Remember, he's just a kid. He doesn't really even know what any of this is about yet. But he thinks Verlaine is a little too clingy, and so he leaves. They ran up in Brussels again, and Verlaine gets so mad that he shoots Rimbaud. It's only a small graze on the wrist, but nonetheless, he's put in jail for it.
Wild times.
Yeah. So, you know, they both had what lives? I mean, their lives are almost as interesting as their poetry. They're just a couple of crazy people. Let me give you some Rimbaud first, because he's in a dream somewhere, and it's remarkable the imagery that comes out. This is from his poem "The Drunken Boat," which is one of the most popular.
Yeah.
"And from that time on, I bathed in the poem of the sea, star infused and churned into milk, devouring the green azures, where, entranced in pallid flotsam, a dreaming drowned man sometimes goes down. or sudden dying, the bluenesses, deliriums and slow rhythms under the gleams of daylight, stronger than alcohol, vaster than music, ferment the bitter rednesses of love. I have come to know the skies splitting with lightnings and the waterspouts and the breakers and currents. I know the evening and dawn rising up like a flock of doves. And sometimes I have seen what men have imagined they saw. I have seen the low-hanging sun speckled with mystic horrors, lighting up long violet coagulations like the performers in antique dramas, waves rolling back into the distances, their shiverings of Venetian blinds.
I love that. I've seen what men imagined they have seen.
Right.
And it captures really that idea of when you're young, and you really can see a lot more than all these old people who are just set in their ways and jaded, and that you can see the beauty and wonder and amazingness and just everything about the world, and you really know that this is really what it is. And you get someone who has the ability then to capture that. That's what we have with Rimbaud.
Yeah, at that age, which is, yeah, know, that's what's remarkable. Some poets later on have tried to go back and do it, but he's actually that age. He's actually experiencing it.
Right, and then he has the capacity, though, to express it. So it's,
yes,
that's the thing that's,
yes,
special about him, and, yeah, and really speaks to us, especially when we're a little younger, I think. Sometimes it's a little more like, yes, this is what I feel. I'm with you.
Right, exactly. This is, to some degree, young man's poetry. It's very, very heartfelt. Some of us who are a little more bitter may not get it as much, but but it's still, if you're a romantic, boy, this is the stuff. It's over the top. He did get pretty bitter towards the end. His last collection before he quit writing entirely is called A Season in Hell.
Right.
So he didn't hold on to that ideal. It kind of fell apart for him, that idea that he could find the truth, that he could find the unknown by writing poetry. He felt that he had failed. And he went to Africa. He became a gun runner, of all things, and died at a very young age. So, and disdained everything that he'd done before.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What a wild life. Here's one more. This is just imagery, and it's so amazing. It's called Ruts. It's from Illuminations, which is another of his collections. To the right, the summer dawn awakens the leaves and the mists and the sounds of this corner of the park, and the banks on the left hold in the grasp of their violet shadow the thousand rapid ruts of the wet road, a procession of enchantments. It is true, wagons loaded with animals of gilded wood, poles and variegated bunting, drawn by 20 furiously galloping dappled circus horses, and the children and the men on their most astonishing animals, 20 vehicles carved, decked, and covered with flowers like the carriages of olden times or fairy tales, filled with children dressed up for a suburban pastoral, even coffins under their canopies of night, rearing their ebony plumes, moving past to the trot of the great blue-black mares.
Yeah.
I mean, he sees all this in a rut in a road.
Right.
that's a pretty amazing. So.
Well, let's give Verlaine his due also,
yeah,
here. You know, one thing I said, like, at our book group, which, of course, if you're just joining us, this is Classics Now, the radio program of the North Coast Great Books Discussion Group, and we're discussing the French poets who we discussed in our last meeting. Our next meeting, we're discussing Chekhov's The Steppe. So please read along with us and join in. But for now, we're back to Verlaine. And as I said at our meeting, I felt, as I've gotten older, I've drifted away from Rimbaud so much, even though it's amazing still, and really understood Verlaine a little bit in the way that I couldn't maybe earlier in my life.
Right. There's a touch of sadness and remorse and nostalgia about Verlaine that you don't find in Rimbaud. I think, mm-hmm, just because he, mm-hmm, never wrote when he was older, for one thing. We talked about how the arts were changing, and one of the most popular and well-known poems by Verlaine is called The Art of Poetry, mm-hmm, and it kind of describes the changes that were going on at the time. You must have music, first of all, and for that a rhythm, uneven, is best. Vague in the air and soluble, with nothing heavy and nothing at rest. You must not scorn to do some wrong in choosing the words to fill your lines. Nothing more dear than the tipsy song where the undefined and the exact combine. It is the veiled and lovely eye, the full noon quivering with light. It is in the cool of an autumn sky, the blue confusion of stars at night. Never the color, always the shade, always the nuance is supreme. Only by shade is the truffle made between flute and horn of dream with dream. Epigram's an assassin. Keep away from him, fierce wit, and vicious laughter that makes the azure weep, and from all that garlic of vulgar dishes. Take eloquence and wring his neck. You would do well by force and care wisely to hold rhyme in check. She's off if you don't watch God knows where. Oh, who will tell the wrongs of rhyme? What crazy negro or deaf child made this trinket for a dime, sounding hollow and false when filed? Let there be music again and forever. Let your verse be a quick-winged thing and light, such as one feels when a new love's fervor to other wings, sighs, and soul takes flight. Happy-go-lucky, let your lines disheveled run where the dawn winds lure, smelling wild mint, smelling of rhyme, and the rest is literature. So he wanted to toss out everything about poetry that had been done before and just make it anew and just go with what he heard and felt.
Oh, and the music of it, I mean, it comes right out at the beginning, and his other famous poem, Clair de Lune, is...
Was set to music by Debussy.
Yeah, yes, Debussy, yeah. And it's just, of course, one of the most beautiful pieces of music I've just ever heard. And it's funny, looking into, you know, Debussy's life and Verlaine and Rimbaud, it's like they're all kind of scoundrels.
They are.
And it's like, but there's such beauty within what they created. It really captures the time and what was going on right then.
Yes, Verlaine, as I said, he pretty much drank himself to death. The last 10 years of his life, he tried teaching. He actually took on another student, but he never really got over Rimbaud. And he spent the last 10 years of his life in poverty on the streets of Paris, drinking a lot of absinthe. But he was well-known enough and popular enough that actually the patrons of the arts sort of supported him and actually named him Prince of Poets two years before his death of alcohol-related illness. Mm. So here's another one. This is a lovely poem that just, it's got so much wistfulness in it. Hope shines like a wisp of straw in the stable. Are you afraid of the drunken wasp's mad flight? See, through a chink the sun makes dust motes bright. Didn't you doze with elbows on the table? At least, poor soul, a drink from this cold well. There now. You see, I'm staying with you. Soon you'll sleep, and I will lull your dreams until, like a rocked child, you babble your own tune. Noon strikes. Please leave us, madam. Now he sleeps. It is surprising how a woman's steps ring in the brains of poor, unhappy men. Noon strikes. I've sprinkled water in the room. Sleep. Hope shines like a flint in a cavern's gloom. Ah, when will September's roses bloom again?
Yeah. So you can still taste the difference, the flavor, but it's still the capturing of just all that's there.
Indeed. It is very, very lovely. And he's got a lot like that, have that lovely little bit of nostalgia at the end.
Yeah, yeah. And like you say, it's one of those things of such extreme, positions and kind of people fall into just kind of like things that we've already said, but these guys are really discovering what's really there and not just falling back on platitudes and cliches, but just really embracing what exists.
Indeed. I think we all enjoyed reading these two. We were lucky. We had a French speaker come to to our meeting, and we got to hear one in French, and believe me, they're lovely, even if you don't speak French. It has this wonderful just kind of flow to it. It's very nice.
Yeah, that was very nice.
Well, Solomon, this is going to be your last Classics Now, you say.
Yes, I have a few projects I'm working on, and they're really taking up a lot of my time and actually kind of centered around the late 1800s. So I'll let you all know about that. I'm going to put a little plug out for me when that all happens. But we'll be having a friend come, a new member of our group.
We will.
Next month. So
we will. And I want to thank you very much for all your work with me on Classics Now. It's been really wonderful working with you. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Oh, I really appreciated having opportunity when Dick went on his travels and then just kind of take over after that. And it's just been really a pleasure to work with the extremely professional staff here at KHSU, Lorna Bryant. And Katie Whiteside have always provided the most excellent service to me while I was here trying to just share a little bit of our group. Please join our group. Find out what we're reading.
Yeah, and we would love to have more of you if any of you are interested. Next month, I'll be joined, as Solomon said, by another member of our group, Shane Miser, and we will be discussing Anton Chekhov's novella called The Steppe. It should be interesting. I've read plays and short stories, but I've never read a novella yet by Chekhov, so yes. I'm looking forward to this.
Well, I'll be there at the meeting, so you won't get rid of me that easy. So. Well, for Mary Harper, this is Solomon Iverta for the North Coast Great Books Discussion Group's Classics Now. Have a classic day.